T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
The Bernstein and Rahimi Show, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, I'm fired up baseball guy.
I wish more guys pissed me off when I played.
Cody Decker.
Hey, Cody, why do you not like the Brewers?
Trash organization. The launch angle craze is absolute madness.
Outfielder Cody Decker.
If you don't take advantage of the data, then don't play this game. I got into a fist fight with Mauricio Dubon in the dugout.
Center field, Mauricio Dubon.
I had to lead off that inning. First pitch, I hit a ball 470 feet.
Swing and a drive hit to deep left center. That ball's headed for the wall. It is gone! It's gone! Cody Decker with a game-winning two-run home run.
Baseball analyst Cody Decker.
Did you ever play for a manager who you didn't think was anticipating or didn't think was doing the job that he should have been doing?
Yes, multiple times. One of the times was just because he didn't know what to do because he was an idiot. Another time he just, you know, chose not to do it, which I would actually say is worse. You can have the worst mechanics in the world. I don't care what they are. Hunter Pence looks like he was a lefty hitting right-handed, but he was on time and he raked. That's what you have to be, plain and simple. You can have the prettiest swing in the world. I don't care. If you're not on time, you're useless.
I'm locked in.
I would go back and play for the Brewers for free before I ever put on the Rockies purple ever again.
Cody Decker with Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
Let's talk baseball with Cody Decker. He's on Twitter at Decker6. He's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. He is on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Cody, how are you?
Oh, man, I'm living the dream. I'm looking at both of your very, very, very handsome faces, and I'm just loving getting the chance to talk about some baseball. Let's go!
Big day for the Cubs yesterday when we thought the bottom was sort of falling out. They put a stopper in there, and they sweep the twin seven-inning doubleheader against no less than Clayton Kershaw and Trevor Bauer, and that was despite starting a Triple-A kid out there. Sometimes baseball's just going to baseball on you, is it not?
You know, to quote Ryan LaVarnway in what was named yesterday top 35 greatest baseball movies of all time, Heading Home, The Tale of Team Israel. Yes, I am the star of that. Go check it out. He says, listen, it's baseball. At the end of the day, the worst team in the world can beat the New York Yankees on any given day. It just has to be that day. And yesterday was that day. And it wasn't 2 sevens. It was a 7 and a 9. And by the way, have you changed your tune on the extra innings yet?
No, I don't mind it. It's just at some point I will. At some point, it's something's gonna bite me. I don't mind something being over earlier because I'm old, and I want to go to bed.
Well, I gotta say, man, the Cubs looked amazing yesterday. Obviously, knocking Kershaw out in the first inning—that is not something that happens to a player of Clayton Kershaw's caliber, to say the least. Not to mention in a seven-inning ball game. I think the Dodgers were very much planning on running Kershaw out there the entire seven innings, and next thing you know, he's knocked out in the first. 4 runs early. Hendricks, man, oh man, he finally looked like him again. What a job he did. With the exception of the one, I mean, I wouldn't even call it a mistake in the seventh. That was a hell of a swing to put that ball in the right field stands. It really was. He was out on his front side. He just caught it and got it out of there. Hendricks looked like Hendricks. Now, that being said, if the Cubs start putting together a season, Hendricks is going to remain a Cub. But if Hendricks keeps showing up like that and the Cubs do not win, then you will not see him in Cubs uniform in August.
Really, even after he signed the deal and they seemingly have committed to him more than any other player out of the major core that they have left?
There is no reason to keep him. If you guys are planning on doing a full-on rebuild, why would you center it around Hendricks? He's getting a little bit up there in age. You might as well get a whole haul for him. You didn't get much of a haul for Yu Darvish, so you might as well try to get a haul for Liam Hendricks.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what he's gonna bring back in return. I don't know if other teams view his sort of soft tossing alchemy the same way the team does that brought him up, that discovered it, that invested in it, and that knows him well. I'm not sure how that is on the open market.
You might be right, but you know, speed is the game right now. But if Hendricks is getting ground balls and he's getting outs and he's getting through innings with limited pitches, he eats innings. That is huge, especially late in the year, especially when you get to October.
Another piece of information that I thought was key out of what we saw out of the Cubs yesterday was where we're seeing Javi Baez swing now and the pitches that he's seeing and trying to turn on. It's not just stuff that's low in the zone. He's seeing the ball better. It was nice to see him happy after the game too and hear from him being happy. What did you think of what you've seen out of him? We've seen some higher stuff, both in that Cincinnati series and then yesterday, where he's able to turn on it now and get bases out of it.
You know, it's not just him, but yeah, Javi Baez absolutely getting on time to speed up in the zone, hitting that huge two-out home run in the seventh inning yesterday to actually really secure them that sweep of the day. Listen, the Cubs' offense is dynamic when they're on. When they're off, it's a disaster. But right now, yesterday, these last couple of days, these Cubs are finally looking like the offensive barraging team that they should be on paper. Chris Bryant is having a monster start to the year. Not just a monster start, a borderline MVP start to this season. He has finally shown people that he is healthy and ready to go. And quite frankly, not only Hendricks, I mentioned early on, if Bryant keeps this up and the Cubs don't win, they will get a haul for him. He's completely getting rid of the entire narrative that he's broken, which I love. I'm loving this revenge tour because he's a hell of a ball player.
Well, and we now have some information from Tom Verducci at Sports Illustrated, who has given us the science of what we're doing, given us the method, and showing us the work that he's done to adjust. Rather than just trying to generate backspin by lifting the bottom third of the ball, it's the opposite now. His swing thought is different. His angle of attack is different. His hands are higher. His stance is more straight. He's done it. He figured this out because he knew the pitches he was missing, and the every bit of data and metadata is reflecting a successful adjustment on the part of Bryant and his dad.
Absolutely, and that article goes into details on how he talks about getting on top of the ball. Now, keep in mind, getting on top of the ball is not necessarily a brand new swing path. It's just more or less a mindset. Every single player, no matter what, you put them in their batting stance, their hands are on top of the ball. The pitch is going to be down 3 feet off the ground, down to the bottom of middle to the bottom of the strike zone, most likely. Your hands are on top of that. In fact, Troy Gloss used to call a pitch high in the zone. He used to call that wall high. You don't need to go get it. Your hands are already there. Go right to the ball and hit it. That's it. It's that simple if you let it be that simple. And, you know, hitting can get very complicated, especially when you start getting into the metrics and the launch angle. It's really important that you keep it as simple as possible. And what he did was more or less simplify his approach. He went to a 12-year-old approach, and it's working. Not just working well, it's working extremely well. He couldn't hit balls at the top of the zone. He was getting out. Not to mention he was not healthy for these last couple of years. The wrist injury was clearly affecting him, and now he's out there healthy, getting on time to pitches up in the zone. If he is handling pitches up in the zone and down in the zone, this guy is going to have a monster year.
Yeah, we're seeing that already, and you're right. And we're seeing it in the production of the fields as well. You talk about launch angle versus timing and the myth of launch angle, in your opinion, versus the actuality that is timing. And one of the points in that Verducci article was him saying that he starts his hands before his foot starts in the swing. That's your timing piece. How crucial is that to what we're seeing out of the performance?
Very crucial. As I said on the show before, hitting is all timing. Timing, 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 and then there's some more timing. That's really all it is. I mentioned Hunter Pence. That was in the opening package. Hunter Pence didn't look good, but man, was he on time. Chris Bryant creating a new timing mechanism. I've created different timing mechanisms throughout my career. I chose something that towards the end of my career, more of a body sway that my hands were connected to. He's doing more of a hand sway that his body's not so much connected to. It's almost like his hands are on a bit of a pendulum going back and forward. It's a really good and effective timing mechanism. And as you can see, it's clearly working, not to mention the taller stance. When a guy is as big and tall as Chris Bryant, normally you don't want to get them too low into their legs. Yes, he'll get some leverage, but you want to use as much length through your swing as you possibly can. And he's got a lot of length through his swing. And as you can see, he's taking full advantage of everything he has in his body to hit these balls right now. He's hammering pitches he couldn't touch last year.
Yeah, that body sway is something that I remember watching during youth instruction from the Ripken camp when they did their swing through Chicago. They always said, go back to go forward. And they always gave the example of when you throw a punch, you don't throw it right from here. You draw back. That's where your power comes from, that nobody throws a punch directly from their shoulder without cocking it back first and saying that the ability to, if you're not going to interrupt your vision and your eyes aren't going to shake around, if you can go back slightly to go forward, that's what can start you in, start you down, get you set.
And main word you just said right there is slightly. Now, there is a big give and take on this. If you're going too far back, say your knee goes over your right ankle, you're going a little bit too far, you're going to sway too far forward. I always describe it to hitters as if I drew a chalk line down the center of your body is 50-50. You can get to that 50% mark. You just don't want to cross it. The moment your body goes past that 50% mark, you're overcommitting to a pitch. Unfortunately, you don't know what that pitch is. If you're on time to a fastball, great. If he throws you a slider, you're out on your front side and you have no chance to make a good solid contact with that pitch. So, yeah, you want to get a little rhythm and sway back, but only to a point to get you to a point, because you don't want your eyes to move so much. At the end of the day, hitting, you have to have the ability to see the baseball, and you got to keep your head as stationary as you can.
What do you think the White Sox should do regarding Luis Robert's injury, and how should they backfill that spot?
It's a tricky situation. It's early in the year. It's very hard to make trades this early unless you want to give up a lot for it. So your really only bet is either to go in the free agent market, which is not as plentiful as it normally would be, or promote from within. And that's probably what they're going to do, and it's what I would do. You know, Jake Lamb is probably going to get a couple extra bats. I hope he's got an outfielder's mitt on him. I think he needs to probably dust it off. I know you don't like it. I don't like it either.
He's
I didn't think they could even sign Jake Lamb.
But
this is the situation we're in. This is the situation we're in, man. I don't know what else to tell you. Other than that, you're going to have to give up the farm to go get a legitimate another player, and that's not a good thing to be in May.
Well, the good news is their pitching staff has just been brilliant. And Dylan Cease last night was remarkable. And Steve Stone, or who was it? It was Benetti last night that made note of the fact that it looked like Yasmani Grandal was giving him more of a centralized target, that was allowing him more of a stationary anchor point. And that may be part of it. It may just be he's starting to get it a little bit. I know Layla brought up earlier in the show that he had a conversation with Lance Lynn that was helping him pick out where he wanted the ball to go and identifying that target point. If something gets right, if something is all connected up with Dylan Cease's stuff, I'm not ruling out something kind of special perhaps happening with him. Are you?
I mean, no, I don't think it's fair to rule out for anybody. But right now, look at the pitching staff he's getting to be around. He's rubbing shoulders with. You mentioned Lance Lynn. Now you got a Lucas Giolito. And I know Lucas has had I wouldn't say faltered the last couple of weeks. I mean, he pitched a gem a week ago that, of course, got ruined because of that seventh inning. And he pitched a pretty good game a couple of days ago that bats just weren't alive, unfortunately. But, you know, he's rubbing shoulders with some of the best arms and minds in baseball when it comes to pitching. He's going to pick up some great stuff over there. Not to mention that, guys, let's get rid of the DH. Dylan Cease had 3 hits yesterday. It was awesome. You know what I'm saying? National League DH, forget it. No DH. All pitchers hit. That was sweet. 3 hits? Are you kidding me? Had no at-bats in the minor leagues or in the major leagues, and he got 3 hits? That was awesome.
Advantage usually does go to the pitcher in that situation, but Cease proved us all wrong.
I just simply cannot fathom that happened. It was truly wonderful. Those bats were alive yesterday. Listen, the White Sox are going to be okay. I truly believe that. They got a pitching staff that can carry them. I think they got more than enough offense. Yes, we know that Jake Lamb is not the answer, but unfortunately, we got to play the cards we're dealt. The White Sox, I think, are in a division that is not very good this year. I think the Royals are playing a little bit above where they should be playing at the moment, and they're getting away with certain things. I think the Indians are just going in the absolute opposite direction. The Tigers are at least 2 years away. You really only got to deal with the Twins. And the Twins, in my opinion, just aren't the same team. And plus, once they get to October, you know they're one and done. They're going to run into the Yankees. That's what happens every October. So the Twins aren't going to do much. the White Sox, I really think, still have more than enough to win this division.
We saw that Dustin May is going to have Tommy John surgery. We now also see that Jacob DeGrom, again, has lat tightness. We can't necessarily enjoy guys throwing 101 or 102 or the number of times that DeGrom dances with triple digits. And it always seems fleeting to me. We get so excited. I go, oh, my God, look at this. But it's the inevitability of injury at these speeds leads me to believe that we're getting pretty close with all of the fixation on velocity. We're getting pretty close to in general, starting to max out some of these human bodies.
Yes, and at a much younger age, in fact. The human body is just not meant to throw 102 miles per hour. It doesn't matter how much recovery and how much training you do. Yes, you can get there, but you know, you're playing with fire from that point forward. Dustin May, luckily, is a very young guy. He's going to get Tommy John surgery around the same age that Lucas Giolito did. So it's not going to be the end of his career, but he might need to make adjustments to his pitching going forward. Maybe not. Some guys come back from Tommy John stronger than they ever were. It is a possibility. So he's young. He's going to be fine. You see Jacob DeGrom getting pulled for tightness. I think he's going to be fine as well. It's just going to be one scratch start. But yes, as you can see in Major League Baseball, the average age of starting pitchers is getting younger and younger and younger, and they're breaking down younger and younger and younger. Careers are going to start ending at 26. 28-year-old pitchers are going to be labeled as ancient. Man, I was 31 getting called pops in my AAA locker room. I was 31.
That's just disturbing. But that makes Grandpa Rossi at 38 make a lot more sense. And additionally, you talk about the conversations that players have between each other. And on TV and in the media, we tend to exalt the coaches and the manager and the staff. But how valuable are those conversations, like the one Dylan Cease had with Lance Lynn, and how much can guys really learn from those? I think we tend to underrate them, whereas players, you guys know that that's as valuable as the coaching you get.
That's actually a fantastic point. Thank you for bringing it up. Those of you who are listening right now that don't know the dynamics of a clubhouse, your teammates are so much more important to your development than your coaching staff will ever be. That is just a fact. I learned more from my teammates than I ever learned from any hitting coach. In fact, the teammate that I learned the most from hitting-wise is now a hitting coach over in Milwaukee, Jason Lane. And at the time, Jason Lane was a pitcher for us. And I learned more about hitting from just picking his brain for 2 months than I ever did from any other hitting coach I ever had. You know, we hit together. We see what works for each other. When we go in the batting cage, we hit off the tee with each other. We chat. We start seeing what we're working on. And we can start picking things that might work for us. Things that are working for Chris Bryant will not necessarily work for me. I'm 5'11", 225. Chris Bryant is, what, 6'5"? It's not the same thing. You can't have the same two different body types to do the exact same thing. We want the same result, but we have to take different avenues to get there. But getting to see different styles of hitting, guys who are a little more uphill, guys who are a little more, quote-unquote, downhill and steep, you kind of learn the benefits of every single swing, and we get to kind of pick and choose what we want to implement into our own swing. So when I say that learning from your teammates is paramount, it is, absolutely, especially if you got someone who is smart and wise. And that's the thing about wise players. The wisest players are not superstars. They just aren't. The wisest players are the players who were grinders, the guys who failed. Wisdom comes from failure, not from success. I'm sorry, I love Manny Ramirez, but I would much rather listen to Jeff Fry talk about hitting any day.
That's why great players tend to make terrible managers and coaches, because it's usually the exception rather than the rule, because they're like, yeah, just do that like I did. Well, no, it's really hard, Skip.
Yeah, no, I had a hitting coach just like that who I really loved. He was a big leaguer for a lot of years, but when it came to teaching hitting, he just couldn't do it. It just didn't – he didn't have that part of his brain where he can take what he did and explain it to me. And it would be something that he would take a bat and be like, no, just do this. And he'd take a swing and say, that looked great. What did you just show me? And he couldn't tell me. It was maddening. You need someone who is not good at baseball to teach baseball.
And that man's name is Chili Davis. No, I'm just guessing. Based on some stories, perhaps, that I've heard. Cody Decker, thank you for being our teammate. We love it as always every week. Thanks.
You guys are the best. Take care, guys.
That is Cody Decker, our baseball analyst here for the Bernstein Rahimi Show on Sports Radio 670. We'll talk football next. The offensive coordinator of the Oklahoma State Cowboys will tell us about the Bears' new apparent starting left tackle. Casey Dunn is going to be on the show in just a moment on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Who's that? Good to see you. Bear down. The Carolina Panthers have traded the 39th pick to the Chicago Bears. With the 39th pick, the Chicago Bears select Tevin Jenkins, tackle, Oklahoma State.
And that's exactly the guy so many of us wanted after we started drooling over him, reading these scouting reports, or just the kind of mauler this offensive line needs. We'll see what we have. And it looks like they are clearing space for him potentially at left tackle with the release of Charles Leno. Here is one of his coaches joining us now in the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline. Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park or at apnissan.com. Casey Dunn is the Oklahoma State Cowboys offensive coordinator, associate head coach, wide receivers coach. How many jobs you got, bud? He is on Twitter at Casey_Dunn on The Score. Hi, Casey. How are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate being on here today to talk about Tevin. He's a great kid.
Yeah, when did you know when he walked on the campus? Obviously, just seeing him on the hoof there, you know that that's a large human being. But when did you know that he would likely be playing on Sundays?
You know, it really became evident as soon as he started getting in with Coach Glass. You know, that's our strength coach. And, you know, when he started posting the numbers that obviously you saw, you know, that he did with Pro Day. I mean, the kid's an outstanding athlete. And you know, that's probably the first time you saw a glimpse of, okay, this guy's a Sunday guy because he's got all the tangible things that they're looking for.
One of the quotes I found interesting was Coach Gundy saying that he was really getting into football over the last 18 months, which is crazy to think, given the level of the program at Oklahoma State, what he was doing already, and then how he was able to get it up to that next level. So tell me about how that happened, what that meant for him really getting into football, and then how you were able to see that potential turn into performance.
Well, you know, the big thing is Charlie Dick, your offensive line coach, you know, he did a great job, I think, getting Tevin to understand you know, what kind of future he had ahead of him if he decided to pursue, you know, football. And, you know, not many people can go and play, you know, football at that level, especially getting into the NFL and being a high round draft pick. So once he bought into the fact that, you know, he was a guy that had a chance to do that, it was all systems go. It was green light for him and there's no looking back. So that's probably the biggest thing that ever happened really to Tevin, is him just buying into what Coach Dickey was telling him and the rest of us. I mean, it was, you know, it took a village and in the beginning we weren't so sure, but about midway through his college career, like I said, the light went off that he has a chance to play on Sunday and he never looked back.
In your offense, how differentiated are the left and right tackle, and how capable do you think he'll be of making the switch to the blind side in the NFL?
He started off as the right tackle for us when he first came in. And then, obviously, he's an excellent football player, so an offensive lineman. So we moved him to left tackle. We actually did that last year, and he worked at left tackle in the spring for us going into the season and then started game one versus Tulsa last season at left tackle. But, you know, unfortunately for him, there were a ton of injuries for us on the offensive line, especially to our right side. And his backup at the time had much more experience at the left tackle spot. So we moved him back from left tackle to right tackle so that his number two guy behind him could just step forward at the left tackle spot. So for us, it was a matter of moving pieces around to make Oklahoma State better and more sound, which it ended up being perfect for us. But to answer your question, he's more than capable and more than ready to play the left tackle spot. He trained at it for a year for us. And then, like I said, game one all of a sudden was flipped over back to his home spot. But there's no question he can play it.
Well, and we always joke about facing a Big 12 defense. But on the other side of that is the level of offensive skill and the offenses that are in the Big 12. And that very much includes your offense, how many plays you run a game, how difficult it is to pass block for everything that you guys do in a 60-minute football game. So tell us about the level of difficulty it takes for people who might not know when it comes to pass blocking for so many plays that you can run in a potential game and how that translates for him.
Yeah, you know, our offense is fast. We're a tempo offense, so, you know, a lot of the things that we have are built around memorization. And, you know, different than the NFL. You know, you come into a huddle, and in the NFL you come into a huddle and you listen to the quarterback and he feeds you information. You have time to process, and then you go line up and you execute your responsibility. For us, one of our advantages at Oklahoma State is playing with tempo, you know, speed. So we have a lot of calls that are one-word calls that, you know, include the formation, the play, schemes, motions, everything. And so he hears the one-word term, all of our kids do, and he's got to know how to execute that play. So there's an extreme amount of memorization, especially for offensive linemen. And, you know, he is – shown time and time again that he's just a brilliant kid. I mean, that's one of his strongest attributes, I would say, is you know, his intelligence. I mean, it's by far probably the best that we've had around here for a while. I mean, very, very sharp kid. And he can come back off to the sideline too and execute and tell us exactly what he saw out there. So it gives us, you know, a heads up on what to call in the next play and how they're playing it on defense. But you know, again, to answer your question, I mean, there's a lot on our plate. There's a lot on the plates of a lot of our kids, and but he certainly handled it with ease. I'm just a really, really smart kid.
We're talking with Casey Dunn, the offensive coordinator for the Oklahoma State Cowboys, here on the Bernstein and Rahimi Show, weekdays, 9 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. He seems like kind of a goof in a good way, too. And I love the quote that he had in the Zoom meeting, describe yourself, and he just called himself a nasty MF-er and actually articulated the entire word. And then after the fact said, am I allowed to cuss on here? And there were a lot of Bears fans like, okay, this is a fit. And just the fact that he obviously, his game has an edge to it because he's always, it seems like, looking for somebody or something to hit. And he has got the right mentality for a physical sport.
Yeah, he is a lot of fun. I mean, there were times that we weren't so sure, but then, like I said, 2 years in, all of a sudden it just flipped. The whole script flipped. And then he was a nightmare for, you know, opposing defenses and defensive ends, and just became a physical dominant guy. And, you know, so there were some question marks in the beginning, but and I think that that's where that came from is, you know, all of a sudden he's convinced himself, you know, that, you know, he can do it and smash people. And it came easy. And he just continued to roll with it for about 2 years, 2.5 years or so. You know, Gundy says 18 months. It might have been a little longer than that. But you know, it's been fun to watch because he's taken some of the best defensive linemen and balled them up, you know. And we certainly appreciated having his skill set out there, no question.
How much of that is his on-field persona and how much of it is his off-field persona?
You know, he's a different guy. When he comes off the field, he's very cerebral. You know, you have a great conversation with the kid. There's generally very little you wouldn't know that he was a football player, let's put it that way, other than his size. I mean, that's kind of a dead giveaway. but right. When you talk to him, he, you know, it's not that same typical conversation. I mean, you can sit back and he, like I said, he's very articulate, very smart. And, you know, then all of a sudden when he takes the field, he becomes another guy and you know, just, wow. I mean, just very, very impressive. And it was cool for us to see his coaches, you know, just to kind of see the maturity that he had. And I don't mean that he ever made mistakes, but just his maturity in his game and where he took it and how far he, you know, kind of pushed himself to be that physical, nasty, dominant guy that everybody had hoped it would have walked through the door. I'd love to tell you he walked through the door like that, but he didn't. He changed himself about midway through, and you guys get to see the benefit, you know, of the change that he made.
It's easy to say the switch flipped, the light went on. We can use these euphemisms. Why and how? Now that you've seen it happen, what can you trace it to? Was it a one coaching point? Was it turning a particular negative into a positive? That would, after the fact now, what made it happen for him?
Again, it was his vision of seeing himself in the NFL. I don't know when he walked through the door that he believed he was an NFL tackle. I don't know that. I do know that about 2 years ago. I know that that's what happened. And I believe, you know, between Coach Glass, like I said earlier, and Coach Dick, your offensive line coach, between their conversations with the young man, certainly, you know, we all had a hand in saying, hey, look, dude, you can do this on Sunday, man. You can take care of yourself financially. You can help your parents. You can do the whole deal and be a first or second round draft pick. You know, finally, when he bought into that, it all turned. And from there on out, you saw a different football player, one that played with so much more confidence than he did his first two seasons.
And the Bears are the lucky recipients of that, and looking forward to seeing him as soon as they can in pads. Really appreciate the time today, Casey. Thanks so much.
You bet. All right. Good luck out there.
Thank you.
That's Casey Dunn, Oklahoma State offensive coordinator. When we come back, a quick little basketball thing that Jordan Malley found, and it's from a podcast called The Hoops Collective with Brian Windhorst, and they had Mike Schmitz, one of the guys from Draft Express. They redrafted this year's class, and I think you'll be interested to know where Patrick Williams of the Bulls went and what they said about him. So we'll give you that sound in a moment on The Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show on your ride home. Afternoons 2 to 6 on The Score.
Justin Fields made the draft for me. This is not a good way to build a team in terms of depth. Just continue. He's traded up, what, 9 times now since he's been here? But when you're desperate and you don't have a quarterback, I applaud it because the only thing that matters is going out and getting a quarterback.
Danny Parkins, Matt Spiegel. Afternoons 2 to 6 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. An Odyssey Station.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
2:25 left, right corner open. Patrick Williams, 4-3, and he knocks it down. The rook out of Florida State, drafted 4th overall. He's got 5, and it's 45-40.
Well, what do you think of the rook now? We've had a season to try to evaluate him, and my grade is still kind of incomplete for the 19-year-old, I guess, unfortunately. I think I still really like him. I wanted to see him get a little bit more aggressive. I thought we would have the Patrick Williams game by now. I really do. I thought by now we would have had that one night where he gets 36. Or that one night where he's like, no one's stopping me tonight. And I'm a little disappointed, frankly, that we didn't.
Do you blame any of it on the fact that they drafted for Vooch and now it's a very different team?
I don't know. It has to have something to do with it. Sure.
That
kind of instability or the way they transferred over their entire offense and they re-engineered their offense. It has to have something to do with it. But I just think that for somebody drafted where he was, for the amount of run that he's got, for a day one starter, we would have had the P. Will game that was more of an obvious I'm here, notice me. I mean, he's had some great moments, but he never had that night where he's like, this is going to be completely my night, and I'm gonna get 35 points. It hasn't been there. Well, some experts talked about it. Brian Windhorst and Mike Schmitz on the Hoops Collective podcast talked about how they would redraft this round. Let's see where he fits in.
Well, you know, he was rising on draft boards at the time. This was still a surprise. The Bulls has done a very good job of keeping information from getting out. Nobody was really sure what they were going to do, if I remember correctly. And people thought that Halliburton might actually go here at number 4. So in this redraft, where are you at?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Patrick Williams, to be honest. And, you know, this is probably the part of the draft where Kevin and I, you know, start to disagree a little bit just because, you know, I generally lean more on kind of my pre-draft evaluations and so much of that is just because the nature of my job, right? I'm watching these kids since they're 15, 16, 17, and that's kind of the bulk of my data. But with Patrick, you know, at the time, I probably would have said, you know, I would have taken Denny Avdia, you know, maybe a couple other guys I would have taken as well. You know, but I really like how he projects long-term. I mean, when you look at, you know, 6'8", 225 pounds, 230, that type of length, and the fact that he's shooting, you know, 38% from three so far. I mean, that was one of the bigger questions.
39, yeah.
Is this guy going to be able to shoot it well enough? It's a little bit slow. But I mean, I think he's like 62% on corner threes, you know, when you talk about just his ability to space the floor from there and then handle the ball. He shoots a lot of mid-range jumpers, but I kind of like how they're letting him develop, like own those mid-range spots, make corner threes, and then give us effort, you know, defensively. I'm not sure he's been the defender everyone hoped right away. You know, he can improve in a handful of areas, but when you look at those big wings, whether it's a Jaylen Brown or a Kawhi or anywhere down the spectrum, they're obviously hard to find. And, you know, one last point on him, he's younger than Jalen Suggs, Evan Mobley, and Scotty Barnes. So just to kind of speak to the fact that he's just kind of scratching the surface right now, and I think there's a lot to like about him long term.
Okay. We'll take that under advisement. That's a guy who is got a more of a trained scouting eye than I do. I guess that's just saying take the long view and settle in and let him develop.
Well, and isn't that what the Bulls did, essentially? That was such a surprise whenever he was originally drafted. And that's the idea, is that how young he was and how he's going to take shape in the upcoming, not year, but years.
Good. I'll feel better about that. Lawrence Holmes is going to join us briefly next. He's got David Ross coming up at noon. So we'll do a quick transition in a moment on The Score.
The Score is Chicago sports. Chicago sports is The Score. Thanks for keeping us the number one and most listened to sports station in Chicago. Listen on your radio, laptop, mobile device through the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Or tell your smart speaker to play 670 The Score. We're live and we're local. 670 The Score. An Odyssey station.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.